And welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here in the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. Hi, Sondra. How are you today?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing all right. You know, still in lockdown. I feel like not much changes sometimes. Like, I mean, obviously there's always like news and that kind of stuff, but just days are starting to look the same. I never know what time it is. That's just kind of life now, isn't it?
Pretty much. It's felt like there's been a lot of news before.
But it's not terrible.
No.
I mean, you know, like it's been a decent enough week.
I mean, it feels like there's enough going on. I mean, I'm going to be brutally honest. I wasn't really blown away by either NXT or AEW this week. Like they were
both fine.
They were fine, but like, you know, I think like now that we're in the whole like we are in empty arena wrestling mode and that's it. Unless there's like something wacky going on, then it's hard to be like excited. Before we talk about current wrestling or anything going on, I did want to give a quick plug to Patreon because we have loads of new content going up there all the time. And a couple of things about that is we covered, as a bonus for all you guys who have pledged and been so supportive, we covered the reboot Nitro from April 10th, 2000 of Russo and Bischoff. I thought we had a really good discussion about it.
I think so too. I'm actually very proud of that podcast. I think we did well. My brain did not explode all over my microphone, which I was very afraid it would because, oh boy, did none of that show make sense. But I think we did a good job.
So, Sel, why should people listen to us discuss the Russo Bischoff reboot Nitro? What do you think about it? Because it's over 2 hours. What about it do you think was a reason that people would enjoy it?
I mean, I feel like we both, even though we did not care for the episode, I think both of us did not care for the episode. I think there was some interest about new talent facing old talent and what they were trying to do with their reboot and kind of what they were attempting to do. I think we approached it as graciously as we could and tried to find like what they were trying to accomplish with all of this. And then, you know, there's some interesting discussions about certain talents. If you want to just hear me lose my mind for 2 hours, which a lot of people seem to find fun, we've been getting very favorable reactions, just me being baffled by the world. So apparently that's fun for people. But I think that there are some interesting discussions in comparing it to Raw too, and kind of like what could they have done so that this would be more effective? How did they do at explaining things to an audience member who doesn't know all of the backstage goings on of WCW Nitro? Spoiler alert, they did not do very well. I don't know. I thought we had some good discussion, and I think it is quite humorous to hear both of us just being like, why? What reason?
Well, because one of the main things that we, you know, I'm assuming most people who are listening to this or who are going to listen to that have, you know, have a rough knowledge of Nitro at that point in time. And the thing is, what they did do, and, you know, I complimented them on it on the podcast, is like they did bring in real life situations, which can sometimes make for really interesting programming. By having the Kidman.
If you explain those real life situations on screen, it's really helpful.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So there's Kidman and Hogan, Shane Douglas and Ric Flair are the two main ones. And they have these kind of like, you know, they take elements of the real stuff to bring into the fictional world. But what was where it lost us was that like Sondra had no idea that there was anything realistic because she was never told any of it.
I barely knew who Shane Douglas was.
Yes, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, I get what they were trying to go for. I just think in hindsight, I mean, I actually, after watching it, like, because, you know, full disclosure, there was plans at one point, and I'm sure we will again, attempt to bring Eric Bischoff back over to the UK. And, like, I almost want to focus a whole night on this show. This
night. That would actually be fascinating. Like, that would be very interesting. I would want to see that show.
Yeah, because you'd want to hear, like, you know, okay, talk us through the idea. Like, what was... Because, you know, hindsight is easy for us to go, that was shit, that was that, that was that. But, you know, there was obviously an idea initially.
Well, and I'd be very curious to know, like, what players were pushing for what. I mean, obviously, like, Hogan and Nash and people of that sort were going to be pushing for themselves to be the most important, right? Like, I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure that out. But, like, what were the dynamics in play backstage?
And that, yeah, it would be an interesting thing to hear what he had to say about it. Also, fairly exciting news, everybody. The lockdown has allowed us to finally get our finger out of our arse, because we had been posting old classic ITRs and like. So here's what happened for people who don't know. I'm not going to say the name because there's just no point. But basically,
years ago,
somebody hacked in to our we used to do the main podcasts, and then we had a VIP service over on our website, not through Patreon. And basically our whole VIP system basically got deleted. We did not delete it. And then somebody logged in, I mean somebody who had login information logged mm-hmm. in to our Podbean
and supposedly had all of the backups of the content.
Who logged into Podbean, which is what we used to use before Podomatic, and basically deleted the account with the idea, well, if I delete the account, then everything will be gone. Luckily, you know, Detective Sondra was on the case, and she contacted Podbean, and they were able to send us all of our files that we had. We just didn't have any, like, you know, you'd have the file name, but you wouldn't have any of the tags or descriptions or anything like that.
No, it was still Podomatic, and I had to manually go in and download every single episode that was unsorted. Like I had to click file.
We got Podbean stuff back though. Where did we get that? When did we get that?
I think we got that from Adam Ferguson.
Okay, well, so Podomatic or Podbean, we got the stuff back, but yeah, you had to go through.
Yeah, because there's a whole bunch of Podomatic archives from like before we were hacked. We still have data, like thank goodness, but they're unsorted and undated. So now we have the task of like going in and listening to some of the episodes and trying to figure out what week they were done.
So we'd been posting
whole process.
We'd been posting classic ITR from the beginning, and I think we got up to like January of 2014, and then it stopped. And I know a lot of people were like, "Why is it stopped? Like, are they going to come back?" And the truth was that we just between like January 2014 and 2016, so it's about 2 years. We think mm-hmm. that through various ways, we have pretty much all the main stuff, like. A lot of the old VIP stuff we just don't have, but you know that's fine. But we have everything else, so we're sorting through stuff. The good news is that Sondra is going to be able to upload from January 14 the main Inside the Ropes classic ITR pretty soon.
Yeah, I found some old Blog Talk archives that I didn't think we had. So the intermediate time, if you remember the Blog Talk days. Old-time listeners of Inside the Ropes, I found some of those episodes. So I can start uploading those very soon because those actually have dates on them too, which is very helpful. And then by the time we get through that, which I think takes us through beginning of March 2014, then we should have the rest of the stuff kind of dated and sorted and figured out. So it's been a process, and thanks everyone for your patience as we're kind of like trying to cobble together our archives from a very unfortunate situation. That was a really bad week, that week that we got hacked. I remember just being quite upset.
And then, imagine how upset I was when after all that happened. Then Facebook
got for you, like all of the interview stuff too.
Yeah, there's like loads of interview stuff that's gone. Because we used to put interviews on the Inside the Ropes podcast, and then it should be like a half of the full thing. So we'd have like 30 minutes on the show and then 60 minutes on the VIP. So, I mean, we still have all the edited versions, which were always the best bits. So we have that. We do have some interviews that we're going to try and get and stuff. So we've not lost a ton of shit. We've lost some stuff, which is quite annoying. But like then, yes. The same person, I would imagine, that did all that, then...
It seems like it was the same culprit because it was all within a week.
And in that same week, said person then like logged into my Facebook and email and did it like at the same time that I was like, I happened to just be online. And I, yeah, so I'd went to log into Facebook. You know, like if you're on your browser, like Facebook's just open, right? You're logged in on your own laptop on Facebook.
Right.
So I go on Facebook and I'm logged out. And then I try to log in and it's like, your password's been changed. And I was like, what? So luckily, yeah, because I caught it at the exact point it was happening, I was able to like intercept my emails before the person was able to get into that and get them out and then add a layer of authentication. So now it has to go through me. So,
because your Facebook was shut down for like a whole day.
Yeah, it was.
Because I remember texting you and having to text you and be like, did you block me on Facebook? Like, what is happening?
It was a bad time.
It was a very frantic phone call. I was at work, actually, and I was like, yeah, this is a phone call I need to take. Whoever I was working with, I was like, can you just come over the counter? Because, like, there's some shit going down, and it's not good.
But, you know, the thing is, we were able to move on and stuff, and now we obviously have we're on Patreon, so it's all controlled, and all of our content, you know, you kind of have to get through us to get to it. So it's not, it's all fine now, but it was just.
And
it was,
I mean, shout out to Adam Ferguson and Alex Beavis for sending us a whole bunch of archive stuff that they just had on their computers. Because otherwise, a lot of that classic ITR stuff that's already uploaded on Patreon, we wouldn't have been able to do.
Yeah, they were lifesavers, Adam and Alex. So, but the good thing is now, I mean, the thing is, I think that the lockdown almost kind of helped us be like, oh, this is a job we kind of need to get through. So we'll do it now. Because I think if we didn't do it soon, we were in danger of kind of not getting around to doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So, and this is motivation to do it. And we have time right now. So we're getting our house in order, Kenny.
Yeah. It's very, very weird to be so organized. Okay.
We're being very adult. I'm very proud of us.
So I wanted to ask you about something first, because AEW are going to be starting to run their shows again at the beginning of May. May 6th, I think, is the first one they're going to be doing, which is in 2 weeks. And I've seen some people kind of online in various discussions, and I just wanted to get your take on it. There's some people who are kind of like, you know, they see wrestling as an escapism, they're happy to have it. There's some people who are saying, well, you know, some people were taking WWE to task for doing shows, but those people aren't taking AEW to task. Do you think there is a different rule for AEW? Are they doing it any differently in a way that you think is different to how WWE are doing it? Should all of them not be doing it? How do you feel about the whole, you know, as of basically now, shows are going to be live in Florida because the governor opened up the state, and WWE and AEW continuing to do shows? What do you think of it?
I mean, realistically, if I go on my, like, stay the fuck home, everyone, like, kind of moral high horse, then it's not ideal for them to be doing these tapings. Like, AEW, the way that they're doing things, having people around ringside, like, even that seems irresponsible in a lot of ways. So, like, in my ideal head world, no, they really shouldn't be taping, WWE or AEW. I think AEW gets more of a pass from people just because they have a lot more goodwill as a company. I don't know why they would insist on doing live. Like, if you're going to do tapings and stuff, which again, like, is it super responsible to be doing? Probably not. But I mean, if they're taking all the precautions and whatnot and want to have people get together and do some tapings, like doing the batch thing like they did before, you know, having everyone in the building at the same time and then doing like 5 weeks of programming and then letting people go home and, you know, self-isolate and do what they need to do. I think that's a better way to go about it than trying to do live television, because if you're having people travel every week and come in every week, then that's just more dangerous. I mean, it's the same conversation that we had about WWE going live. And then now WWE's on this weird, like, every other week taping schedule that still doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me, but what do I know? I'm not in charge of a company. So yeah, like I'm uneasy about it. I'm uneasy about both companies taping in the way that they're going to. At the same time, I'm glad to have the wrestling. So I feel kind of like a hypocrite, because like, am I going to watch the shows? Yes. because I have to, obviously, for this, but also because I've been enjoying them. Like, if I'm in the mood to watch a show, then it's kind of nice to have some, and it feels a little bit, like, I've gotten used to the empty arena thing, and that doesn't even bother me anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because when people say, you know, WWE or AEW should not be running shows, blah 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 blah, I don't necessarily disagree. I'm it's not like I'm like, you know, yes they should, but I don't care enough to get angry about it, because I think, you know, there's been conflicting opinions about, you know, I know there was that thing that leaked out about the guy or the person who said that they were a WWE employee and they felt like they were being forced to work. And then WrestleVotes had said that they've checked people in the company and that's not true. I don't know. Obviously, that shouldn't be happening. But I think, you know, most people are, I mean, from what I've heard, people are going to work if they need to go to work. And that's just kind of the way it is. So the empty arena shows are kind of bumming me out a little bit. I'm finding that every week, I like, the novelty's worn off. And, like, you know, particularly I was watching AEW this week, and the Dustin Rhodes Kip Sabian match, where, you know, Dustin's career's on the line, and I thought the match was fun, but it just really felt like without a crowd that it just lost a lot of what it would have had before. And I think they were just kind of finding that, like, sometimes without a crowd it works and sometimes it doesn't, and there's not really a way to figure out if it's going to work or not without a crowd until you do it. So that's an interesting kind of thing to note. But it appears this is going to be the normal probably for the rest of the year. But, you know, and Vince McMahon in his Q1 call this week, he said that, you know, they don't know when they're going to be able to get fans again, and they, you know, they want to be the first ones to do it when it does happen. I mean,
of course they want to be the first ones. They always want to be the first ones at everything. Remember how they were like, we run the first show after 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. They ran the show 2 days later in Houston. But, yeah, I'm just, I really just want fans back. When that's okay, when it's safe to do, obviously, but it's just, that would be, you know, there's people like, I can't see Edge coming back until there's fans. Like, I just can't see him wanting to do that. There's a lot of people who probably won't come back until there's fans. But what something that Vince did say in the Q1 call I wanted to get your take on is that he said that while there are no fans, they intend to do more mini movies like they did at WrestleMania. So what do you think of that idea? I assume that you are for this.
I feel great about that idea. Yes, 100%. Like, make things bonkers, experiment with your format, and if, you know, if after coronavirus times have ceased or lightened up or whatever the fuck is gonna happen, who knows, but, you know, like, once this is kind of, once we're back to some sense of normalcy, use the things that work that you've learned during this time and make the programming more interesting. Like, I don't want it to just go back to boring ass Raw and SmackDown that we, you know, well, I don't watch every week, but like, I don't want it to just go back to business as usual and like the same flat product and the same just kind of boring stuff. I think if they can use time to be more creative and do more fun stuff like they did at WrestleMania, then I think that's great. And I think some of the video packages and stuff have been excellent from both companies coming out of this. Like, they've actually had to really look into, you know, deep dive into storytelling and focusing on characters a little bit more and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's been very effective. So it's nice that they almost have to focus on it a little bit more instead of just like the same grind of live television every single week. And it just feels all the same. Like, it doesn't feel all the same. And I think some of the experiments are working.
I hope that they do more of the stuff that is working, like you say. And you can't do Boneyards and Firefly Funhouses all the time, but like, you can do the Money in the Bank thing where they're at the headquarters and they're doing different things. And like, even with, I mean, that's one of the things that I've got to say with AEW is I feel like AEW soon needs to give us something wacky. Like, I need something wacky. You know, because when Matt Hardy had said on Dynamite 2 weeks ago, I think it was, about the Elite Deletion, you know, like, that would be great. And I think we need something like that because I think that the format of just being in an empty building with Billy Gunn and his son nearby is probably gonna, you know, continue to wear a bit thin. Yeah, so
I mean, it's getting Shug D on TV. That's always kind of fun, right?
True. Yeah, there are plus points to it. If they can do more wacky stuff like we saw at WrestleMania, that would be helpful.
I think we saw at WrestleMania that the vibe of the Firefly Funhouse was so different to the vibe of the Boneyard match. So it's not like they only have one style of cinematic match either. Like, they're capable of different stuff. And I kind of want to, like, I'm so excited to see what Money in the Bank looks like. I honestly, like, I can't wait. I really hope it's bonkers.
Did you see that the President of the United States gave a shout out to Triple H on his 25th anniversary?
I try not to pay too much attention to what the President of the United States says, because who knows what I'll end up doing to myself.
Triple H is a total winner.
That's the life we live.
How did you find out? Because I woke up yesterday morning to find out that maybe there's a way to make injecting bleach a way that you can cure yourself from coronavirus. How did you find out about that? I'm curious how you found out that information was... floated out. It wasn't told that you should do it, but it was floated out there as an idea that maybe we can make that happen.
I mean, he didn't say bleach, he said disinfectant, but the whole thing is just so mental. It's just so insane, Kenny. Like, how... I mean, if you look at the doctor's face, like, as he's talking, and she's just like, what? Who is this person? Like, I don't understand what's going on. I found out because, you know, it's all over the news. And all over my timelines. And it's just like, what has the president said today that's horrible? And that's just kind of the life we live, because we live in a dystopian hellscape. And how is this our actual world? I just don't understand. And then the thing that came out yesterday where he was like, well, I was just kidding to trap reporters like you. It's like, even if you were kidding, sorry, I'm just like on a rant now. You got me started. But like, even if you were kidding, you're the goddamn president of the United States, and now is not the time for jokes.
I should mention I woke up to that news. I should mention in the UK that bleach is the most popular disinfectant, so that's why over here we've just kind of taken it as bleach. But
a lot of people have said that, yeah.
But I woke up to that, and somebody tweeted me saying, like, how's it going over there with you guys? And I'm like, not been told to drink bleach yet, so I think we're doing okay.
So at least there's that.
So Triple H had the 25th anniversary celebration on SmackDown last night. I thought it'd be fun, since you're here, Sandra, to give us your favourite Triple H moment and your least favourite Triple H moment of his 25 years in WWE. I thought it'd be a fun thing for the listeners to hear you give him a really big compliment and a really big insult.
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to think, because I feel like we probably haven't even gotten to my least favorite Triple H moment yet. Like, I feel like there's probably still more to come. Right now, in the year 2000, where we are in our retro timeline on patreon.com/insidetheropes, most things that he does are my least favorite. I'm really just not a fan at all.
Has he done anything? Has he had any moment that you've liked in the 25 years he's been
there? The moments that I've liked have definitely been NXT related. Like, I'm thinking of when Seth Rollins came out to, like, you know, confront him at an NXT takeover, or to, like, come and find him. I think that was pretty cool, which I think was more of a Seth Rollins moment than a Triple H moment. But, like, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I popped when I was at the first NXT live show in Columbus, and like Triple H, like, welcomed us to the show, and it was really cool. And it was like, this feels like such a cool, important movement that we're here. So basically that kind of stuff. I can't think of, like, a specific moment, you know, like, I know that there's been stuff that I've been like, okay, yes, good on you, that was actually quite humorous, but I can't think of a specific moment in time.
And your least favorite?
I'm trying to think of, like, the most egregious. What has he done on retro that I've hated the most?
When he did the monkey
motion?
I have
to ask you, because I don't... Oh, yeah, I didn't like that. Oh, when he was in, like, Yellowface being the Chinese doctor. That was pretty bad. Remember his incredibly racist voice for Dr. Hung Lo? And no one talks about that. Everyone talks about DX blackface, like the Nation segment, but they don't talk about the fact that Triple H did this multiple times. And when he was making like the monkey motions at Mark Henry and stuff, yeah, not a fan of that.
It's funny because, so I would say my favorite Triple H moment. There's a couple I'm thinking of, and I can't really say what they are because we've not got something yet in the retro timeline.
I heard they brought up Katie Vick on SmackDown.
They did. That's not my favorite moment. I think that his big return in MSG, I love that moment. There is a renewing of vows that just I love also very much. And then my least favorite thing has got to be the Reign of Terror in 2004. My God, like it was just, yeah, just bad. Very insecure as a performer, I think, when he came back from injury, and I think that just kind of, which is a shame because he is really good, but I think he's just always had a thing where like he is very on edge that he doesn't want MD to like take his spot. And
oh, one of my other least favorite things is when he had that match with Sting. That was bad.
Oh yeah, you hated that.
I really hated
it. I did love that, like, because that, I mean, that was great for people who like had nostalgia for people who had watched it back in the day. But the thing is, like, you couldn't just let Sting win,
right?
Like, what? Like, it makes no difference. Well, he had to look strong for later on with The Rock. It's like, does that, like, would anybody, when he came out an hour later at WrestleMania 31 with Stephanie to do the promo, would anybody have been like, oh, it doesn't work because he lost his thing?
No.
Nobody.
Zero people.
It's funny, Taz, who Taz had done a, ranking system. He was talking about the ranking system thing because somebody on Twitter had responded to him about the AEW power rankings, and someone criticized Cody Rhodes being at the top of this week's AEW power rankings, and they compared him to Triple H, saying that if the game was at the top of the list as an executive, fans would be irate. And basically the person on Twitter had said, if Triple H, let's say, was number one in a ranking system in WWE, people would lose their mind, but the executive in AEW is in every main storyline involved in the new championship tournament, and it's awesome. So funny how that works. And Taz responded with, Triple H has been number one in their invisible ranking system for about 15 years. Also, Cody puts over talent and doesn't bury and crush people behind their backs. I can go on forever with this, sir. You think you know what the deal is, but you have no idea what you're talking about. Taz,
well, I mean,
I
think go Taz, first of all. Yay, Taz. We deserved so much more in 2000. But also, we've talked about the comparisons between Cody and Triple H before. The comparisons are 100% there, and Cody brings them to light by doing things like smashing a throne, which he referenced on AEW this week. And I thought Cody was brilliant on AEW this week. I loved those segments, and it's part of the magic of Cody Rhodes, right? Probably because he does lift up talent, and probably because he doesn't bury people behind their backs, and because he does seem to be invested in the future of wrestling and wanting it to be really good. But I'm sure Cody Rhodes wants to be on top and wants a spot. Like, there's definitely a chip on his shoulder there, and I can't blame him. He just doesn't seem to do it in harmful and detrimental ways the way that Triple H did sometimes. And there is just something about Cody Rhodes in the AEW atmosphere that works. He reminds me of The Rock. He's just so charismatic, and people gravitate toward him. Everyone loves Cody. You know, on paper, it shouldn't work. He should be like a smarmy arsehole who we do not enjoy because he's on top of the world and on like so good at everything, but he's brilliant and people just love him.
I think the comparisons are definitely there with Cody and Triple H, and I think, I mean, anything I say, people are gonna think I'm biased.
Plus, Cody can rein it in a little bit more. He doesn't talk for 20 minutes at me, and I appreciate that.
Whatever I say, people are gonna think I'm biased towards Cody. So, but I think the truth is that there are a lot of comparisons that are fair. I think the difference is that, like, Cody clearly did the thing where he wants to be beaten and have the whole, like, I can't be world champion thing, to kind of take him out of the equation of being world champion so that he could be in his other feuds. He does win a lot, but at the same time, he's a top guy, and top guys should win a lot. Like, Cody, I think Cody is much better booked than Kenny Omega is. You know, like,
oh, yeah, 100%.
I mean, we'll just kind of bring it in. Now, I know Dave Meltzer feels differently, and that's absolutely fine. You know, like, I just didn't really like the Kenny Omega stuff this week on AEW. I was just like, why is he wrestling this guy, and like, it's so competitive. And I get the idea is that, well, you know, Kenny Omega is such a giving performer. What was the guy's name? Alan Angels.
Alan Angels, yeah.
He's such a giving performance. Like, I just don't think Kenny Omega needs 6.5 minutes to beat Alan Angels. I don't think he does. And I think if that happens, what it tells the average viewer, not us, because obviously we analyze this and talk about it every week, but it doesn't make Kenny Omega feel like a big star. And like, he needs to start feeling like a big star at some point. Like, at some stage, he should feel like that. And I think with Cody Rhodes, he does feel like a big star, but he also, even when he beats people or whatever, like, I don't feel like he is. I mean, the Sean Spears one is probably more Triple H-esque, whereas the MJF one is the opposite. You know, like,
yeah.
Whereas what you could say, if he was more Triple H, then he would have put over Sean Spears because he knew he wasn't a threat, and then jobbed out MJF because he knew he was a threat to his spot. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think the opposite comes in.
But instead it's the opposite, because Sean Spears, I think, because he wasn't a threat and because they weren't trying to make him a focal point of the company, then it made, I mean, it didn't necessarily make tons of sense for Cody to just like win right away and then end the feud. I think that there probably could have been more there, but that's not the direction they decided to go. But yeah, I mean, like, him putting over MJF and then MJF going on to be a great, amazing heel, it worked.
I also wanted to ask you, I don't necessarily want to get into the exact situation, but I just wanted to ask how you think stuff like this should be handled. Somebody on Reddit had made a claim about Velveteen Dream, and that he had been inappropriate towards a 17-year-old girl and her 15, 16-year-old friends. There was a brief audio clip that was also uploaded there. He has tweeted out saying that he did not do this and that he is looking into relevant authorities. How do you think this should be handled in terms of, if you're a fan, should we be condemning Velveteen Dream? Should we be not consuming entertainment to do with him? Should we be seeing how it plays out? Like, how are you kind of thinking about it when you're seeing it play out online?
I'm kind of waiting to see how it plays out online. I think it's a different situation because, you know, there have been other situations like this with other performers, and like, loads of people have come forward with very similar stories. And then it's like, okay, this seems pretty sketchy. Like, I'm always of the mind that you should believe people and you should take them seriously, and there should be an investigation. So there 100% should be an investigation. If he was creepy toward minors, then I would assume police are involved. I don't know. Like, I haven't really read that much into the situation, but because I've seen some places online that are like, oh, it has to be like, the screenshots are fake because of this. And they're like looking at the verified tick symbol and the bottoms of the starbursts are cut off, and like, Twitter investigation's wild, you guys. But I mean, I think that you have to take the claim seriously, and you have to say, okay, this is definitely something that needs looked into. You shouldn't dismiss it right away. But I don't think it makes sense to vilify the performer just outright and say that they're a terrible person and like, cancel them and be like, you're a horrible scourge of the earth until you know. Because if it is someone making false claims, which would be horrible, and I don't like to think that people would do that, but if it is someone making false claims, then you're ruining someone's life for nothing. So I think it's just, it's tricky and it's messy and it's shitty all around. Like, do I hope it's not true? Of course. If it is true, then I think 100% that needs to be dealt with.
It's rough, right? It's rough because you don't want to be, you don't want to be the person who doesn't believe somebody. You don't want to be the person that condemns somebody before it's been thought through. I mean, I've seen the screenshots that came out. I mean, there is kind of this, you know, not to make light of something, but there is this kind of funny, like, the detectives come out, like you say, they're like, I see the tick, the tick is not there. If you look at this you know.
Like the size is wrong next to the name and
So the thing is though, I think that if he does something that I think should happen regardless of whether a wrestler is guilty or not. It's like, I think if you become in any way famous through like wrestling or whatever, like you need to be so careful about, because if you are very kind of active in sending a lot of stuff, then like stuff could get leaked out. And I think the problem is that even if you haven't done anything, stuff is going to be out there in the ether, and it's difficult because then you just never know. But at the same time, you know, if it does come out that he has done this, then I don't really know how he could remain in NXT or on WWE. Like, that's just, it's too messy.
Oh, yeah,
messy.
If it's found messy. That he was
it's
being,
too messy.
Like, creepy to minors and stuff, then, yeah, like, then he needs to be reprimanded and he shouldn't really be around anymore. Like, especially because it's, you know, like, it's minors. That's not cool. Like, it's not cool to be a creep to someone in their DMs, like, regardless, obviously, but it's an actual crime to be sending explicit photos to minors, like, unsolicited and whatnot. So it's not great.
It's not great, but I thought we should mention it because I know people have been talking about it. Were you happy to see, I don't know if you even saw this, that Bayley was vindicated by Vince McMahon on SmackDown last night?
Okay, so I have not seen the SmackDown segment. What happened? Because the description that I read of it, that Vince McMahon came out and called WWE stupid and boring and then turned out the lights and there were crickets. Is that what happened?
I mean, essentially he came out and he was like, so because like they had like Sean out there and then they had like Flair on FaceTime and Road Dogg on FaceTime. I mean, it's so cringe, it's kind of worth a watch. But
okay, how long is it?
I think it's like 10 minutes or so. I can't remember. I was watching it earlier today, but I can't remember the exact time. But I think it was about 10 minutes. And Vince comes out, and at one point he's talking about, he's talking about how bad this is, and he's like, you know, this is worse than This Is Your Life with Bayley. And then he was like, there were crickets for that, and he was like, not Bayley's fault, by the way. Basically, like, indicating that Triple H had booked that This Is Your Life segment. And like Triple H is cackling, and then like Bayley tweeted out and she's like, thank you, Vince, it wasn't my fault. So she's finally getting some a reprieve from that segment that people hate so, so much.
Well, good. I'm glad that vindicated and she's not to blame for that being horrible. I mean, I didn't even watch that segment. Because I just didn't want to. I was like, I heard how bad it was, and I heard that it died a death, and I enjoy Bayley as a performer, and I didn't want to be put through that much sadness. So the whole segment at the end of SmackDown does sound very bizarre. I might watch it, but like, then there's a part of me that's like, do I really just want to watch Triple H be in Triple H? I don't know. I'm undecided.
Okay, so let's talk about NXT.
Do you think it's something that I would enjoy? Like, is it worth me watching, or am I just going to be like, ugh, another DX reunion?
I think it probably. I think that you might find some morbid, curious enjoyment out of the Vince bit, and I think that bit is just on YouTube as a clip, rather than like the full thing. I just don't think you need to see him and Sean and Flair and Road Dogg. But like, I think the Vince bit is pretty funny, just because like Vince looks mental. Let's talk about NXT and AEW. We'll talk about NXT first. So. We're obviously not going to go through everything on the show, but let's talk about the apparent disappearance of Finn Balor. What did you make of this? I have no idea what's going on.
What is happening? Because we were supposed to get Finn Balor versus Velveteen Dream last night, and I was quite looking forward to that match. I thought there will be many abs on display. Remember how I said it is a shame that this promo segment took place with shirts on, but good thing we're going to see them wrestle? And then we didn't get to see them wrestle. And I felt very robbed of that experience. So that was disappointing. I don't know. Is Finn Balor hurt? Is he gone? Where has he gone? Do we know anything?
William Regal put out like a storyline thing where he said, still looking into the events of what happened before NXT on Wednesday, I can confirm that Finn Balor was attacked and left the premises. He received medical attention. But I think
I am sorry, but Kenta is right. They need to get security for that parking lot.
I don't know.
It's a dangerous place to be.
Maybe it is going to be one of those things where like Imperium attacked him. But, like, it just feels very weird to not have that on the show. Like...
Yeah, it makes... Because I was going to ask you, like, if anything had come out in The Observer or anything about, like, why he wasn't on the show. Or if it's just storyline. Is it going to be Karrion Kross and Scarlet? Like, did they attack him?
Who the fuck knows?
Because they like to attack people?
I also wanted to ask you, though...
It's very weird. Because, like, remember when Hideo Itami got attacked? We knew that his shoulder was injured. But they showed it still.
Yeah, like, why did they not show anything on TV? That was the one I didn't understand. And obviously, again, we're supposed to get Velveteen Dream Finn Balor.
I wonder if he refused to go to work or something. I don't know.
That's possible. Because, you know, you never know. His wife could be compromised or something. Like, you just never know. What did you make of Tegan Nox and Shotzi Blackheart against Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez? I know we've both kind of been a little bit underwhelmed by the feud. We saw Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez get the win here when Big Raquel, as I like to call her, beat Blackheart with the Uranage. What did you make of this? Did this help the feud any? Did it remain the same lukewarm factor that it had before?
The feud is still kind of lukewarm for me. I am going to be incredibly biased because seeing Shotzi Blackheart on TV just makes me really happy. So I liked it. Like, I thought it was fun enough. Like, I kind of like Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Nox being a team because I think it's a way to bring Shotzi on TV, get her involved in something. And they have, you know, they have a foil to go up against. But the feud has been so out of order and so underwhelming, it's kind of hard. So I was happy because I like those performers and I was happy to see them, but I can't say that the feud is like everything to me. I like Raquel and Dakota Kai together a lot too, actually. I think their dynamic really works.
I like the idea of it. I just wish it was more exciting in execution.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in NXT that like, and there's stuff on this show as well where like, I get it. It just, a lot of stuff didn't click for me. But we'll, you know, when those things come up, we'll get into it. I did want to bring this up because I thought you'd be very happy. Jake Atlas gets a win over Drake Maverick in the Group A match of the interim. There's a lot. Group A match of the interim NXT Cruiserweight Championship tournament. But Jake Atlas got the win with his DDT at the end. He had a promo afterwards saying he felt on top of the world. He tried to talk to Drake Maverick, but Drake was pretty upset. Jake said he was rooting for Maverick and then, you know, he wants to win the tournament. There's a few things at play here. This is Jake Atlas's, you know, kind of proper, it's not his debut, but it's his debut as a character, really. And Maverick's story is kind of, you know, because they're not like avoiding showing us kind of what's happened with Drake Maverick. They're kind of, they played the video when he got released from Twitter. So this story's interesting. What did you make of the match, and how did you react physically when Jake Atlas won?
I mean, I was so happy. Like, I was so happy that Jake Atlas won, but at the same time, I wasn't as happy as I should have been because I'm so bummed for Drake Maverick. Like, I knew that Drake Maverick lost before I watched the episode. And it's kind of what I figured what was going to happen. So I didn't really avoid spoilers on this one just because it seemed like a pretty, I don't know, foregone conclusion. But it was interesting bringing in the Drake Maverick story, right? Like showing the video on Twitter of him talking about his release and then interviewing him and him saying, you know, this is my life. I need to win. I need to do this. And I think it's really smart of him to use that in a promo. I've seen a lot of people be like, is he actually fired? Are they like just doing a storyline? Like, I'm pretty sure he was actually fired, guys. But, you know, under the 90-day non-compete, he is still, you know, going to work. And the way he said it in the video, he's still allowed to go and be part of the Cruiserweight tournament, which is great. Like, it seems like he wants to do it. He's, from all accounts, from everyone who's, you know, knows him and all that kind of stuff, he loves wrestling. Like, wrestling is his life. He absolutely loves this. So it's nice to see him get to be able to be a part of it. But I love Jake Atlas so much, and I was happy to see him win. I thought afterwards it was handled pretty well. Like, you see Drake Maverick leaving and Jake Atlas is like, he's excited. Obviously, he's excited because he's like, I'm new here. I'm going to be the interim cruiserweight champion. This is great. I worked so hard. I really liked their match. Thought it was great and had lots of emotion behind it. And I was invested. Obviously, I love both performers. And then when he sees Drake, he's just like, I feel so bad. Like, he didn't say it in a polished way. It was just kind of like, I'm so, oh man, I feel so bad. Like, I was rooting for him. But I'm still like, I'm going to be interim cruiserweight champion, and I'm really happy about that. So it felt conflicted. It felt like how you would react after you win a match like that, which felt very human. And I think Jake Atlas just comes across as a very likable human. So I loved this. I thought it was great. I don't know. What did you think?
It was fine. I like Jake Atlas enough. The thing is, like, the cruiserweight title is like one of my least favorites because it's very rarely character driven. I like it more when it's character driven. So, like, because there's a tournament and it's not that straightforward of a tournament, and it's all a tournament to get an interim champion who's then going to have to face the real champion, it's a bit, like, convoluted for me, especially when there's not really a lot of character stuff going on. The biggest character thing in the tournament is Drake Maverick and his story. So I am into that part of it. You know, the match was decent. You can see why they've hired Jake Atlas. He's good. I did want to ask you, because when I was watching this, I was thinking about it a little bit, and then I saw somebody tweet about it. Do you think that Jake Atlas, should they talk about him being gay, talk about him being an LGBTQ wrestler? Should they not? Is it something that should be part of his story? Are you bothered?
I'm not bothered. Why would I be bothered? That's a dude that they hired. I think if he wants that to be part of his story, then they should allow that to be part of his story. But he's been passed about not wanting to be like the gay wrestler, right? Like, kind of similar to you, how you're like, I don't want to be like the gay podcaster. I want to be like a podcaster who is gay, right? And yeah, that's something that's kind of, you know, like, I think you and he are very similar in that way. Where he's like, it's an important part of his life, obviously. He's not ashamed of it in any way, shape, or form, but he doesn't want that to be his character. Like, he's very different to someone like Effie or Jack Sexsmith, who, like, that was so central to what they were doing in wrestling.
Or even Sonya Deville, who's been very open that she wants to do a lesbian storyline. Like, she wants to incorporate that into her character. So, I mean, I guess that's the difference.
Yeah, and I mean, it's obviously it's different for everybody, and if they want to put him, I mean, not every wrestler needs to be in a romantic storyline, right? Like, maybe that's something for a little bit down the road. Like, maybe they can do character vignettes on him, and he can talk about that, and they can show his undercover boss segments and all that kind of stuff, because I'm sure they're going to bring that up at some point, right? The fact that he was on that show with Stephanie. So, which I didn't realize that was him until, like, way later, because I watched that episode, and, like, I've seen Jake Atlas live, and I heard of Jake Atlas, the wrestler, through, like, completely different avenues, right? Like, because I follow a lot of queer wrestlers, and the name Jake Atlas kept coming up as, like, he's really good, you need to see this dude. And then when I finally saw this dude and saw what he could do, I was like, oh man, he's so good, I really love him so much. And I think it wasn't until he got hired by WWE that, you know, in the article they were like, oh, and he was part of this undercover boss. It was like, that was him? That was Jake Atlas? Oh my goodness, that's crazy, right? Because I just knew him as, like, really great wrestler dude. I'm not bothered that he's not, like, coming out in rainbow. That's his choice. He doesn't have to, you know? I don't wear rainbow every day.
I'm not bothered. I'm just bringing up conversation. Does not bother me.
I figured you were not bothered by
it. Yeah, I'm the least bothered person.
I mean, it's an interesting thing to bring up because, you know, like, they don't have that many gay wrestlers on their roster, but, you know, like, he doesn't want that to be central to him.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
is great. Like, that's fine. That's his choice. I like that they didn't just hire him to, like, have him be a rainbow waving token dude too. You know, like, they hired him because of his merit and his talent.
What did you make of the Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae promo where they were at the dinner table and they were basically cutting a promo about where they see things, they want to take over, where they stand? Did it work for you? Talk me through your thoughts.
I am in love with the Garganos. I want to dine with them. I love Candace's purple hair. I love how salty they are about the world. I love their motivation. I think they're totally correct. Like, they do seem more like the heels to me a little bit now, but they seem like the heels that I'm like, yep, I am on side with you, because they're right. They're absolutely right. Candace has been overlooked this entire time. She's been Johnny Gargano's wife for so long. And even when she gets a feud, it's like she does really great things with Io Shirai, for instance. And then it's just like, oh, never mind, you're gone, you lost, so you're not on TV anymore, go back to being Johnny Gargano's wife. That is frustrating. That is frustrating for me as a Candice LeRae fan. I can only imagine how frustrating it is as a Candice LeRae. So, and Johnny Gargano too, him, you know, constantly being in the shadow of Tommaso Ciampa, constantly, you know, being Johnny Wrestling, being the best, being awesome, and not being the guy. Like, that is frustrating. So I love the fact that they are on side with one another. I love that they are a power couple. I love their whole aesthetic. It was gross to have the cup on the table, but, like, I just love them. I love them so much. I think they are great. Love them.
I am happy for you that I just... didn't like
you didn't
this.
Like it?
I just thought it was so forced. Like, I felt like I was watching, like, I liked the Candace parts where she was talking about what was going on and, like, being the big sister of the women's locker room. That'll work for me. But, like, I didn't get what it was. I didn't understand why the music was there. I didn't understand, like, the verbiage just seemed very forced. I guess I don't buy that this is Johnny Gargano, and that's the problem. And, like, I don't know, just the way it was shot was really weird to me. Like, what was that? What was the thing they had in the middle of the table, like a big game mouse control thing? Do you know the thing I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
In the middle of the dinner table, they had this, like, thing in, like, in a container, like a glass container. And it looked like it was some sort of, like...
Wasn't that the cup that he wore?
Oh, is that what it was? Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give them that one. I'll give them the cup. But, like, I felt like it was, like, they were trying so hard to give you this thing. And, like, I don't want to really criticize Candace's aesthetics. Who am I to tell her the way she should look? But I just felt like it was, like, it just felt a lot of change at one time that, like, didn't really...
I love
really...
Dark Team Candace. I'm so here for it.
But I don't know why... that is her look now. Even when she was talking, that didn't explain to me why she's completely different aesthetically now. And they're having dinner and she's cooking for him. There's weird music and then it goes black and white at points. It just, none of it felt like it, like, was telling a very coherent story. It felt more like it was like, we want them to both be evil. I would love for the person who sort of booked it to kind of talk me through what the idea was. Because it just didn't work. I just didn't buy it, most of it. And that was the problem I had with it. And, like, I like them as performers, but... I thought
they explained their motivations really well and came across supervillains.
I just don't buy they are supervillains. I guess that's the problem. I don't, like... I think that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to be like, we are now supervillains. But I just didn't buy that element to it. And I don't know. I just thought the...
I don't know, I've seen smarmy, sarcastic, up himself Johnny Gargano before, so maybe that's why it doesn't ring as false to me, because you've only seen, like, good guy Johnny Gargano, who's the best dude.
That could be it.
Is that part of it, do you think?
Yeah, that could definitely be it. I think that the premise of it, I think it was shot and it was kind of presented in a very odd way, and the way that it was portrayed didn't really fit with how my brain computes those two characters. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of different things going on that I didn't really think all clicked together. Like, she's got this new, really different look, which is great. But then she's cooking him dinner, and then there's, like, romantic music on, and it's like, I think they were trying to go for a lot of different stuff. Like you said, I think the thing that you said actually is probably the best point. They're trying to make them supervillains, right? With the idea that, like, they are, you know, sitting cooking dinner, laughing over the kingdom that they look over or whatever. That just didn't work as well for me.
I loved the juxtaposition of, like, the sort of dark tone with, and then they showed the wedding photo of when they were bright and happy, and they're like, we are not bright and happy people anymore. I don't know. It worked for me.
I think that I've had the whole Gargano, like, when he turned heel a couple of months ago, it's just never really clicked for me. And, you know, there was that couple of weeks where he didn't really explain himself. And then when he did explain himself, I don't know, it's just not really worked for me. I'm like, if you needed revenge, your revenge was to cost him the belt, because that's the thing that it meant most to him. That would be the revenge. I don't get what the rest of it is. And then Ciampa, kind of, him being the babyface, even though he was a babyface before, but, like, he kind of felt a little bit neutered as the babyface in this. And, it just hasn't worked for me. I
feel like anything with Johnny Gargano is, like, your McMahons.
No, but it's not. I actually really like Johnny Gargano. And I like the character he had before. Obviously, I would prefer if his matches were usually 10 minutes shorter. But, like, I really dug him when he was, like, the underdog babyface coming up. Like, he's one of the very few people in NXT where, like, I would, if there was any sort of mini documentaries on him, I would always watch them. I did like him. I just don't think they've done a very good job explaining him being a heel. And I just don't buy it. I don't think that it's working that well. But it's not like I'm, like, fuck them, I hate them, or anything like that. I hope that I come around. I hope that one week something clicks and it works for me. Maybe when Killer Kross and Scarlett Bordeaux come in and we start seeing those two sort of duos going against each other, maybe that's when it'll click more. Hopefully.
Yeah, that could be interesting.
And then we got an Io Shirai video package. She's going to show Charlotte Flair how great she is. I am so here for this match.
So excited for this match.
But
by the way, speaking of Charlotte, this mm-hmm. is something I wanted to bring up. How do you feel about the fact that Charlotte is doing all of her NXT promotion on Raw and not on NXT?
It's weird, right? It's very strange.
Yeah. Like why is she still on Raw? Why is she having a match with Kayden Carter on Raw? Which, I mean, like, happy to see Kayden Carter on Raw, obviously, love her. But why is she doing that when she could be in NXT having this program?
I feel like, I mean, because obviously they've got her on both shows. She's on Raw and she's on NXT. I guess they're trying to sort of have, they're trying to build up NXT by having her on Raw with the belt and stuff, which is fine. But I mean, I was way more into, you know, her coming out and confronting Mia Yim here than I was with, because the Kayden Carter thing on Raw. Like, if I'm imagining that I'm a person who watches Raw and I never watch NXT, I don't really mm-hmm. know that watching Charlotte beat Kayden Carter was going to convince me to tune into NXT.
Right.
Like, surely you would do an angle thing on Raw to set up.
Because, I mean,
like,
she did say something on Raw about how, like, she didn't want to have her first match back in NXT just be, like, nobody. Like, she wanted it to be Mia Yim because Mia Yim was her first opponent, which I don't really understand because Bayley was her first opponent, but whatever.
But I mean, you know, again, I like that Charlotte's setting up, you know, the Io Shirai thing. She's also setting up the Mia Yim thing. So I'm all in for Charlotte just being like, I'm here to fight everybody and you know, try and see if we can get something going. So I'm much more into Charlotte sort of like Royal Rumble to now as like, I want to be the queen of NXT again. I do like that. But mm-hmm. I get your point. It's weird to have her doing like an NXT enhancement match on Raw. It's a strange choice. Surely you would have like Io Shirai attack her on Raw or something to build up like they're going to have a confrontation on Wednesday or whatever.
Yeah.
It was odd. And then we ended up in the main event of the show ended up being Velveteen Dream Keith Lee against the Undisputed Era from what happened earlier in the show. And we saw the babyfaces get the win when Dexter Lumis ended up Dexter Lumis. Why can I not say that coherently? Dexter Lumis. He ended up getting involved when Keith Lee got taken out by Damian Priest. So I thought it was just fun enough. It was, I mean, Velveteen Dream Finn Balor would have been a much better main event from like a big match perspective, but the Lumis thing I was kind of intrigued by. I was like, oh, okay. They're bringing a new guy into the main event scene a little bit and giving him a rub. So I kind of dug it.
Yeah, like he kind of keeps showing up in weird spots. There were many a shenanigan in this match. You know, with Damian Priest coming and attacking Keith Lee with the nightstick and the ref's not seeing it. But Keith Lee, you know, having his throat crushed or whatever they're saying happened. So he had to be taken out of the match. Like, did the rules of this match make any sense whatsoever? No. Why can Dexter Lumis just come and be in the match? Don't know. I mean, I guess Roderick Strong did kind of insert himself in that one match when Bobby Fish got hurt. So that's a thing that can happen even if you're not in a faction, apparently. Like, the rules in NXT regarding tag matches are not very clear. But I like them bringing Dexter Lumis into it. Like, he's a weird dude. He has charisma. He looks interesting. So it's kind of a good way to introduce him into the scene and kind of make something new happen, I suppose. And it was kind of fun. You know, it was weird. If you don't think about it too much, it was fun, though.
Overall, though, NXT, thumbs up show? Thumbs in the middle?
I liked it. I would say thumbs up.
Yeah, I think it was a thumbs up show overall. Even though I had reservations, like, I wasn't bored. And, you know, they're trying stuff. I'm much happier when people are trying stuff than just giving you nothing.
Yeah.
Over in AEW, we opened up with Cody with the the interview that that you mentioned earlier. So you loved this, right? You loved Cody on this week's show.
I loved Cody on this week's show. I thought he sold the gravitas of everything very well. You know, and having Arn Anderson be like, Cody needs to be the champion. And the thing is, because of what you mentioned earlier, right? Like, because of MJF, Cody can't go for the AEW Heavyweight Championship. So now that there's this new title, he can go for that one. And he can maybe be that champion. And that makes it even more important for him, right? And then, you know, the idea that Dustin will retire if he can't beat Kip Sabian. And, you know, he's listening to all these voicemails. I thought Cody was brilliant on this show. Did it work for you?
Yeah, definitely. He sold the gravitas for me on this show. I really, like, you know, Cody's a very dynamic performer. I know you gave the comparison to The Rock earlier on, which is a good one. Actually, like, Cody's involved in
He's like The Rock without the misogyny. Like, it's great.
Yeah. And he, whenever he's having a match, I feel like he's always, like, putting over his opponent in the hype for the match. Like, it's never like, oh, God, I need to, like, face this guy. It's always, like, mm-hmm. you know... He puts the guy over. So and then we got Darby Allin versus Sammy Guevara, which I just loved. Like, I love seeing the two of these guys together. They're like the job that they've done in.
They're always so good.
But like a year ago, you know, we barely knew who they were in we didn't know who they were in AEW because they hadn't really done anything yet. But like in a year or less than a year, AEW have made them like, you know, the really big players. Like. In AEW, and I thought, what did you make of the decision for Darby Allin to go over and do the semi-final match with Cody as opposed to Sammy Guevara? Would he have been your choice? And what did you make of the opening match?
I loved it. I love Darby Allin. I like to see him win a thing because he loses so many things. And Sammy Guevara also loses so many things, but I feel like Sammy Guevara is in that position right now where he can lose, and he's just still like the Spanish god who's so incredibly up his arse, and he's just such a dick, right? Like, Sammy Guevara is amazing. And I think Darby Allin needs it a little bit more. I think Darby Allin versus Cody, again, there is a story between the two of them, right? Like, because they had that draw, I just find that Darby Allin versus Cody is a very interesting match to me. And I know that they've fought twice now. Is that right?
Yes, they have. Because the first one was a draw.
Because... And then the second one, a while, and then Cody won, right?
Yeah.
So there's still kind of, like, even though Cody has beaten him now, like, actually beaten him, there's still that, like, yeah, but Darby Allin's the one that took it to the limit with Cody. So what's going to happen here? I think that there's an interesting dynamic with that. Like, I feel like their stuff isn't done because they've kind of teamed and been in an alliance, but they're not really pals. But, like, I don't know. There's just a Darby Allin-Cody tension that I like for whatever reason. I can't put my finger on why it intrigues me so much, but it does. Just kind of, like, because on his magic potentially is the reason. I don't know. I just love him. I think he's fantastic. So yeah, like, I liked him winning here. It did kind of feel, this match felt very similar to their recent one where, like, where they started fighting forever on the outside before the match actually started. Didn't they just do that?
Yeah, the one at Revolution.
Yeah. So that was my only kind of nitpicky complaint where I was just kind of like, I mean, you did just do this thing where you brawl a lot. But, I mean, it's good action and it's fun and there's Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin and they're great. So it's not like I was complaining about it. I was just like, this is very similar to what you did before.
Yeah, and I like the idea that, you know, Cody's probably going to beat Darby Allin, but, like, you're building to one day Darby Allin can beat Cody. I also like the Matt Hardy promo that he did where he went from broken to regular Matt Hardy. I think my only complaint about it would be that, like, there, you know, 2 weeks ago, Broken Matt was telling us there's going to be an Elite deletion. And, like, we've not really had any clarification on when would that be, what would that be, is that, you know, we just don't know what it is. And I feel like they're not giving us, you know, we know that Jericho and Hardy are at odds, but, like, they're not really doing as good a job at kind of letting us know where it's going. So I hope that next week there's more kind of clarity on, like, is the Elite deletion the whole Inner Circle need to go to the Hardy compound? Is it just Jericho goes? Is it one-on-one? When would they propose to do it? Like, I think now's the time to start telling us what's going on.
And kind of building that world a little bit more in the world of AEW, too. I mean, they've done some of it, one going and visiting Chris Jericho, but one of the things that I thought of when I was watching this. Like, obviously, I've watched Broken Matt since TNA. Like, I remember the contract signing and people showing it to me and being like, wow, Matt Hardy's gone off the deep end. This is crazy, you know, before the final deletion. And I've been on the Matt Hardy train since then. I've been a big fan of it. I've seen all of the matches, all that stuff. But if you're only watching AEW, and even if you watch WWE and saw some of the Woken stuff, I don't think it really translated that well. Like, if you're not that familiar with Matt Hardy and his Broken Universe and you don't know all of the in-jokes, is this really making sense? Or is it just like, what even is this? You know?
Yeah.
Because I don't know that they've really, like, built the world on AEW. It's kind of like you have to see the prequels first.
Yeah, they're assuming going in that you know everything.
And probably a lot of people do.
But, you know, you still do need to fill in the people who don't know. Because some people might just have seen it in WWE.
Which is not the same.
Most people will have seen it, but I know what you mean. I was very happy to see MJF on this week's show when he was giving us an update on what was happening with him.
Was this a Colt Cabana dig?
I think so.
It had to be.
That's why I took it as.
It had to be. Like him getting a hangnail and picking at it and like having a career-ending injury. Like, because if people know that, when was that that happened to Colt Cabana? Like 2013 something? Like,
it was years ago.
It was a long time ago. I remember the shirt that was Save Colt's Finger. Because Colt Cabana like got a hangnail on a plane or something and it got super infected. Like he almost lost his finger. It was like actually really serious because he got an infection. And MJF and Colt Cabana like know each other and stuff. They're like, you know, father and son, whatever. So it's just, it made me laugh so hard to have MJF being like, I got a hangnail. And, you know, like he's at home and he has to recover and all this stuff. He's such a prick. And opening it with, you know, with everything that's gone in the world today by career altering injury.
Yeah, mankind has never been through such depressing and debilitating times because MJF hasn't wrestled on TV. Oh my God, it's so good.
It was amazing. He's great. He's a prick, but he's great.
I was curious, though. Obviously, Brody Lee is, you know, part of your hearts and dreams. We obviously saw the vignette this week before we saw his match with the jobber guy that kind of set up the match with Marco Stunt next week. How did it do this week for you? Are we any closer to him being a fully-fledged character that is enjoyable out with Vince McMahon digs? Are we getting more interesting? How do you feel?
This one didn't have as many Vince McMahon digs, which was helpful because it didn't feel like he was doing Vince McMahon digs. I actually liked the vignette where the guy was like searching and you could see like, oh, Preston Vance's injury takes him out of football or whatever. And then him joining the Dark Order and typing his story and then Brody Lee coming and recruiting him. I like that a lot more than I like, I'm Mr. Brody and I don't sneeze around me. And also you have to wear a tie and all of these things that are just super on the nose that Vince McMahon would make you do. I felt like it was less of that this week and more of him trying to be a cult leader. I don't think it was like great.
Do you think
but
in
it
some
was
ways,
less bad?
In some ways, does he need to eventually have somebody join his cult? Like somebody, somebody on the show, not as in like Preston Vance, but like we need to.
I mean, they've done that kind of before Brody Lee, right? Like Brody Lee, they recruited the Beaver Boys and stuff, and like they've been trying to recruit people like Christopher Daniels and whatnot.
But if the message is that you've never like, because the Beaver Boys, with all due respect to them, you know. If Brody Lee is this big, you know, intimidating cult leader man, he should be able to recruit somebody, like a name. I don't know if Marco... I mean, I actually thought the Marco Stunt thing was interesting. I think Brody Lee versus Marco Stunt could be fun from a kind of aesthetic perspective of Marco Stunt. Like, Marco Stunt is so good at kind of doing the style of, like, he is the small guy against the big guy. And I think there's a lot of interesting things you could do with that when
they
have the match.
He's great at being Marco Stunt.
Yeah, he's great. So I think they'll have a good match next week. I'm still not.
And I'm looking forward to that match. Sure. Like I don't know. Is Brody Lee working for you anymore? Like, because I know that I'm going to like put all the goodwill towards it in the world, and I still love the Dark Order. Like, I don't think that they're terrible. So I was more pleased this week, but I don't think it was like great.
I think it was like 5% better
Okay.
It was a step in the right direction. It felt like we're in a ditch and, like, you know, we've got one tire out of the ditch, but we're still in the ditch. So, like, mm-hmm. we need to get out of it. And again, like, maybe this is something that I think you either need to go balls to the wall with kind of vignette stuff and, like, away from the arena, or have a crowd. I think that's the only way to go with it. So I know that obviously with Matt Hardy, you've got the Hardy compound, but maybe figuring out an environment for Brody Lee to have and doing some stuff off-site that could be, at least that could get people talking. So, the other thing on the show, we had the Dustin Rhodes Kip Sabian match which was the other quarterfinal. Dustin Rhodes obviously ended up going through, so his career was not over. Because he was able to beat Kip Sabian. What did you make of the match? I mean, I know for me it didn't really work as well as I'd hoped it would, even though it was well wrestled. Did it work any better for you?
I liked it. I was behind the emotion of it. I think because retirement was on the line, there wasn't really any part of me that thought that Dustin was going to retire on a random episode of Dynamite. But still, like, I liked the story that they were telling, and they had built it up well throughout the show and on social media too, like so many people being like, Dustin's the greatest, and you know, it was his birthday last week, so it was, wasn't it his birthday?
It was, yeah.
Recently?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like people have been sending out like, oh, it's Dustin Rhodes Appreciation Week and all this stuff. So yeah, like, I was into the emotion of it, and I like Kip Sabian a lot. I mean Dustin's great. Amazing, like how he is so good, and he was so it's really impressive. But yeah, I liked it. I wasn't as gripped by it as maybe I wanted to be. I mean, this was not Cody versus Dustin level by any, but I thought it was good.
Overall with AEW, was it a thumbs up show? Was it a thumbs in the middle show?
I'd say a thumbs up show. I enjoyed it. Like the Kenny Omega thing didn't bother me as much as it bothered you. It was just kind of there.
It doesn't even bother. I mean, I'm not the biggest Kenny Omega fan in the world, but I'd imagine I've heard from a lot of people who are massive Kenny Omega fans that they're very disappointed with his run in AEW, and I don't.
Well, because it's been bad.
Yeah. Speaking of Kenny Omega, though, I wanted to get your take to finish off on this. He did an interview with Bleacher Report, and he was frustrated by the limited TV tent the women have. Here's what he had to say. He said, it's the most frustrating and rewarding feeling at the same time. We have a vision for this women's division that I always wanted to have at the forefront. It's like, okay, Kenny, you've got the reins. Do what you can with 5 minutes of TV time. Wait a minute, we've got this huge, expansive roster. You have people chomping at the bit, raring to go. How am I going to introduce all these people with 5 minutes? How am I going to show you what makes them special? He did admit that the women he said that the women haven't been hitting home runs as much as he'd like. Oh, no, he said they were, because he said that Britt Baker, if you just go based on their reactions, it's probably the top heel in the whole company. They are taking these little, small, minuscule opportunities that we are awarded, and these women are hitting home runs. They succeeded with their 1 minute, 2 minute segments, so they get 5 minutes, that's going to throw to 6, 7, 8, 9, and they're going to have their own show one day. what do you make of Kenny Omega's assessment of everything there?
I mean, it's confusing, because he's one of the people in charge of the company. So who's only giving them 5 minutes? Like, I mean, I don't know the logistics backstage of who's timing out segments and who's making those decisions. But it seems like he should have some input in that as one of the EVPs. I feel like with Kenny Omega, and this kind of ties into the Allen Angels match and everything else he's been doing, I feel like Kenny Omega has good intentions and a vision of wanting to raise people up and wanting to be a very giving performer and wanting to create new stars and wanting to like help lift up a division, but doesn't know how to go about that. Right. Like he had a longer match with Allen Angels, which I thought was good. Like I really liked it. And it was very cool for Allen Angels to get to work with Kenny Omega and get some offense in, right? Like it wasn't just a squash where he looked useless. It was like, oh, maybe this guy could do something someday. And I think that's where he's coming from with a lot of this. And like Kenny Omega, obviously working in Japan for so long, I feel like Joshi wrestling is very different to American style wrestling. The wrestling's way better most of the time. And there is a lot of character stuff in Joshi. Like I'm not super familiar with a lot of it just because I there's so much wrestling and I just don't watch a lot of that. But I feel like there's something that's lost in translation when it comes to AEW's women's division. And if Kenny Omega won time for the women and he's not getting it, and it's other people being like, no, they're 5 minutes, then I want to know who those people are so I can be like, look, maybe give the women more than 5 minutes, because this is really frustrating. Like, that's my biggest complaint with AEW, is that we don't get women's storylines. We don't get secondary women's storylines. I mean, and right now everything's kind of hampered because we're in pandemic time. And so, you know, like people like Nyla Rose and Big Swole are not going to be there because they're immunocompromised and they're not going to be working. And I don't hold that against them whatsoever. I mean, Nyla's the champion, and it would be great to see the champion on the show, but we just, like, that is not the times we live in. We can't do it. We kind of have to work with what we have. But
so,
like,
if you were saying the Joshi stuff is more character based, like, because I don't feel like we've got a lot of character based stuff from the Japanese women that we've seen that have been brought over. I'm not saying they don't have it, but like, you know, if you're saying, oh, they've only got 5 minutes, I'm like, I've not really seen any, you know, Kirishida. Like, what character stuff have we seen of her that we're supposed to be like, oh, okay, we want to see more of that character stuff? I don't feel we've really seen any.
When I feel like a lot of the character stuff comes across in ring with some of these performers, and I think that's more what he's used to. And again, like, I'm not a Joshi expert by any means, so I really can't, like, speak to it. It's just not an area that I'm super familiar with. But I think that when I have seen Joshi matches that are very good, I'm watching these matches and I definitely, like, I can tell who these women are just based on their in-ring style, because I'm, you know, watching the wrestling and it comes through. It's like when you watch Asuka, right? Like, you know who Asuka is. She's shouty and amazing, and she comes across as a person, right? Even if you don't understand her promos, if you don't speak Japanese, you know who Asuka is and she comes across on the screen. But given 5 minutes, that's not really going to work for someone like Kurushita or Rio or whoever. Like, Rio's very likable. When she's in her matches, she's very likable. It's very easy to get behind her. She is a likable girl, I would say, is her character. But if he's frustrated with the amount of time that the women are getting, good, because it's frustrating. But I'm at a loss if he thinks that he's doing a good job booking, like, characters and stories and stuff. Like, you can't just put two women out there and having a match and, like, that's a story, because it's not.
The interview to me, and again, maybe I'm not the audience, but, like, I came out of the interview more worried for the division than I did going in. Because if he thinks that everything we've been seeing so far is knocking it out of the park, I just think that we're in different...
It has not been.
Yeah, we're in different planets. And I
feel like in ring, some of the matches have, and some of the matches haven't even been that good, but some of the matches in ring have been good. And so maybe that's what he's looking at. Maybe he's more, like, narrow visioned, and, like, that's all he really sees as being important is, like, the in-ring action. But just that doesn't translate to an American television audience. And I don't think it would be that hard to give these women storylines and characters that, you know, like, I want to win a thing is a story.
You know, if you look at, you know, NXT are doing the interim cruiserweight title tournament, which, although it's not for me because it's more convoluted, like, in AEW, why don't you just come out and be like, Nyla Rose, our women's champion, is compromised. Therefore, we are going to do a tournament to crown an interim champion. And as soon as Nyla's back, they will face off to be the unified AEW women's champion or something. And then you have eight women who are, you know, they've got a chance to be champion, even if it's just in the interim, and then they can get some momentum to face Nyla Rose. Like, tell that story.
Yeah, I'd be into it. Anything like that would be great. I mean, is Britt Baker doing a great job right now? Yes, she is. Like, since she turned heel and became an evil smarmy dentist lady, then, yeah, like, she's been great, but she's the only one that's really getting promo and vignette time too, right? And I think maybe part of the problem is that they were going to build the women's division around Brandi Rhodes and the Nightmare Collective and that whole debacle, and that did not work. It was something they tried, and, like, good on them for trying and good on them for knowing that it wasn't working, but that doesn't mean just, like, drop all women's storylines either.
So that is it for us here in the main podcast. We'll be back next week with more. And you can always go over to patreon.com/insidetheropes, where there is new content minimum 5 days a week, mostly daily. So if you are in the mood for more content, there's more content going up pretty much all the time. So, but what are the rest of the plugs, Sandra?
You know, in all of our, like, getting our house in order and, like, archiving files and trying to sort stuff, I actually downloaded all of the Patreon archives the other day, like, over the course of a few days. And it's, like, 40 gigabytes on my hard drive right now of stuff that you have access to on our Patreon. It's insane. Like, there's a lot of stuff you will not out.
I think I saw the other day that we have 890 posts. So we have 890.
It's like 896, I think.
Okay. So I checked earlier on the week, it was eight.
Files. See, but I don't even think that includes Finn's written stuff.
So yeah, not far off 1,000. We'll be there in, you know, a couple of months. And you, whenever you get in, you can just go and look at the tags and get to the archives and all stuff. Anyway, what are the other plugs, Sandra?
You can follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. YouTube.com/ Inside the Ropes. Inside_the Ropes is our Twitter. I'm all convoluted because I'm like, no, the Patreon goes next. What do I now? but YouTube.com/ Inside the Ropes is where you can find video content, clips from our live events, all sorts of good stuff going up there. And I think that's it right now.
That is it. To play us out, who should we play?
We should play... I don't know who did good things. Charlotte's a champion, and I like her song.
We could play Darby Allin, because he got through in the tournament.
Oh, I like Darby Allin's song a lot. Let's play Darby's song.
Okay, here is Darby Allin, everybody. Thanks for all your support. We'll talk to you soon. Bye!
Bye!